Blog Talk Radio.
Chatting with Sherry is presented by the Writers and Illustrators of the Future and has been providing a means for new and budding writers to have a chance for their creative efforts to be seen and acknowledged. Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. I'm really excited because I'm welcoming back John Stack. I always mess up your name. I'm sorry, John. And we're going to be talking about suspense. And I love suspense. It's my favorite radio show, radio theater show. I just love, love, love it. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Suspense? Oh, I don't. What's your. Oh, yeah. I was going to try to think of something funny, and then I completely blanked. So I'm just going to go. Hi, Sherry. How are you doing?
He's being silly. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good.
How's everything going? Anything new and exciting?
actually, yes. We're currently working on the final script for the final episode of season 5, and it's sort of. If you're familiar with old shows like Lights Out, they occasionally would do a sort of one where they broke the third wall. Is that right?
Oh, I love
that.
Yeah,
and they would sort of do a show within a show. And so that's what we're doing for the final episode of season 5, because that's like the halfway point for our 10 seasons. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And we actually recorded bits and pieces of it over the past few years, believe it or not. Whenever we had a certain group of actors in, we would get a piece of it recorded, and then we're on to the next one. And that is.
Did you write it?
Yeah. Yeah. We're still writing it. It's about two-thirds done, but we're working out the last two scenes right now.
Cool.
Yeah.
I've always enjoyed them, but I don't know if I could write one. Is it hard?
I'm sorry?
When you break the fourth wall and you're talking to the audience and
that's
doing all that.
I don't know.
Is it hard?
The third wall, fourth wall.
Third wall, not the fourth wall. You knew what I meant.
No, I think you're right. I think it is fourth wall.
I thought it was the fourth wall because there's backstage left and right, and then the fourth is the apron, so that would be the fourth.
Yeah,
yeah, it's the fourth wall. You made me
exactly.
That was wrong.
And you would think a kid who grew up in around theater would know that, but clearly I don't. So, fourth wall. And to answer you, I don't think it's any harder to write than anything else. In fact, it's probably easier because we're using the actual actors as characters. So we're just writing around them.
And you're basing it on their personality?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
cool.
The episode itself is about a series of episodes that we're writing for suspense and what happens. So, yeah, it'll make sense what it's actually done.
Okay.
But,
it sounds like fun.
Yeah. Oh, it is. It's one of the funnier ones, hopefully. Yeah. Humor's always tough because.
Who's going to be in it?
Pretty much everybody.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's broken down into like 7 scenes, and each one is from a different recording session. So it's like 7 different casts. And there's no overlap except for Damon.
Damon's, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, Dana couldn't be
Mr.
with
Dana
us
Craw.
Tonight. I mean, today. I'm sorry, everybody. Just letting you know. Just John and me.
Yeah. Yeah, well. She unfortunately, she's got a lot on her plate right now. Not like me. I'm actually multitasking. Oh, I'm multitasking right now because it's the end of the month and I need like I think 5 more miles to top my the most miles I've ever done in a month running and hiking. And I think.
Oh,
yeah,
so you're hiking right now?
Yeah.
Oh, where are you? Is it? It's been raining and icky here for the last couple of days. Aren't you in L.A.? Isn't it raining and icky?
It was drizzling and icky up until like an hour ago. So I'm taking advantage of the sun actually being out, and here I am.
Huh. Yeah, I haven't looked out in the last hour, so maybe that's why I didn't know, because when I looked out when I had my breakfast, it was icky out.
No, it was definitely icky out earlier. In fact, that's why I didn't do it then, is because it was drizzling and like 52 degrees. I thought, I can wait a little wait a little longer.
Yeah, I don't. Californians are not very big on rain and ick.
No, I've got enough Pennsylvanian left in me that I do appreciate rain, just not when I have to be in it.
Yeah, exactly.
For an extended period of time.
I like rain when I look out or when I'm like have a fire or something like that, but I don't like rain if I have to drive in it or walk in it.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand. I feel the same way.
Especially driving it. I don't know what happens, but California drivers become absolutely insane if a couple of drips of water hit their windshield.
I was going to say that California drivers in general make me a little nervous.
I am a native. But I always try to be careful, not crazy careful, but especially in the rain. My father's voice is always in the back of my head about, you know, how much space to leave between cars and stuff like that.
That's good advice. Unfortunately, the words of my grandfather always stick with me. It's not necessarily you, it's the other guy.
Yeah, I know. The other thing my dad taught both of us is when you get in a car, this is what defensive driving is. Everyone else has escaped from a crazy house. He used to say Bellevue because he was from New York, but basically any insane asylum type thing, because he goes, that's the best way to be a defensive driver. Everybody else on the road is nuts.
Yeah, that makes good sense. That's actually really good advice.
I got that at 15.
Good. No, that's good advice because it makes you a little more cautious.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I still had accidents and stuff like that. I mean, but sometimes, you know, there's nothing you can do. Like one time I was stopped at a stoplight and somebody went whamming into the back of me, even though there were cars on both sides and in front of me. And it was like one of those big, huge traffic stops. That's so obvious. And he said, well, I didn't notice that there was a red light.
Oh,
there was like
good.
Only like four cars. I was like four cars back and everybody else next to me on both sides of me were stopped, but he didn't notice it.
Yeah, was he on his phone? That's one of the things I notice when I'm out running and I see a car go past. The first thing in one direction or the other, the first thing I look for is, are they on their phone? Should I be careful?
Oh yeah. Well, this was pre that. I mean, we had cell phones, but people didn't have the kind of cell phones we have now. When I got hit that time. We didn't, you know, they didn't have the kind where you could, like, look at your messages and stuff. It was just a phone.
Yeah. Oh, what fun's that? I mean, this is probably the first time I've talked on my phone for more than 2 minutes, I don't know, months. I text, I email. I very rarely actually make a telephone call.
I know. Isn't that crazy? Yeah. And my brother refuses to use his phone for anything other than phone calls, and he doesn't even like getting those. He goes, I will not use it. He goes, he will look on his computer for stuff, but he says, I will not use my phone, even though he has one.
Yeah.
I said, well, why don't you get a phone like Mom had that just had the has the phone instead of all the other stuff? He goes, well, just in case.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't get it.
Well, I mean, I personally don't get it, but you know, it seems like a reasonable course of action. If that's how he chooses to do it, sure, it works.
Yeah, good. That's not me either. So, so I have a crazy question now. I don't know if you watch Turner Classic Movies, but I was watching the old Hollywood Dream Factory documentary that what's his name, Dick? He interviewed Nixon.
Okay.
What's his name?
David Frost?
No, it wasn't Dave. Okay, that was a different guy. No, it was the other guy. It wasn't David Frost. He is, I don't know if he, okay, he didn't interview. Oh, I hate it when I can't think of something. Anyway, it was about Hollywood Dream Factory, and they were showing all these old shows and the old times with the actors and stuff like that. When you're writing your Golden Age stuff, do you base any of it on the old Hollywood movies?
No, not really. I mean, subliminally maybe, because even when I'm at my computer, even when I'm editing, I usually have Turner Classic Movies on with the sound off. So, but yeah, not deliberately, I don't. But
okay.
There may be things that work their way in that I don't even realize.
Because I just was curious, because sometimes it just has that feel to me when I watch your, what I watch, when I listen to your shows, that it sort of has that feel of some of the classics that I like.
Okay.
And I just wondered if it was an influence.
It could very well be, but I'm not consciously. I'm trying to think if there's been something on CCM that I thought, I should work that something like that into such and such. I can't think of an example, but you know, it's probably happened. I wouldn't put it past myself without realizing that I was doing it. But, to answer your question, not deliberately.
Okay, that's fair. but I just like I love your shows, and I just wonder what does inspire you then.
You know, it really varies. I'm trying. The funny thing is, when we originally started doing this, I think we were planning on doing like 52 episodes. And the idea was, well, we'll never think of more script ideas than that. Well, but that has not been a problem. Finding time to edit has been the problem. But, what happens a lot of times is one actor will say, oh, I'd love to work with so-and-so. And I'll say, okay. And then I'll think about the two of them and what they are particularly good at and what kind of roles they've wanted to play but haven't necessarily, and then just work from there. I'm going to use as an example an assignation at Panari, which was episode 28, I believe. Actress Ellen Dubin. I don't know if Ellen's been on your show. But if she hasn't, she probably should be.
Okay.
She said,
I don't
she and Bill Oberst Jr. had wanted to do an episode together. And Bill, I don't know if you had him on, but he's another great person to have, because he's done so many things, and he's such a personable guy. Anyway, the two of them wanted to do an episode together, and I thought, okay, well, what's a role? I think I asked Ellen, what's a role that you've wanted to play but you've never gotten to play? And she said she wanted to play something with a like a Russian accent or a Eastern European accent. And I thought, and you know, Bill's very well known in horror circles. And you know, all of a sudden I thought, oh, Dracula story. So I came up with a script involving one of Dracula's wives and Professor Van Helsing, and our fabulous Darren Jacobs was in it as well, because he knew both of them. And yeah, that one turned out wonderfully, I thought.
Cool.
Even though Bill will jokingly talk about how his accent kept slipping in and out, I thought he did fine, but he's, you know, actors are always their worst critics.
Oh, yeah.
At least sometimes. Yeah. I shouldn't say always.
I know that very well. Just ask me.
No, we need to do it again. I can do better than that.
I can hear it. No, I mean, I think every actor is like that. We all hear, and our voices are so different than what we hear in our heads.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just when you hear it being played back, you're like, oh, God, and you kind of cringe.
I've had that feeling, yeah. That's why I often, I'll get everybody else to record their parts, and if there's something I have to record, I'll just get everyone else out of the studio, and I'll just do it.
And do it all by yourself.
Yeah.
Aw. Oh, the person I just popped in my head, the person I was trying to think of who did the narration for that show was Dick Cavett.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It was running in the back of my head trying to think of, I hate when I can't think of somebody.
I think Dick Cavett's still with us, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. He's very much still with us, yeah.
Okay, good. He's always a very interesting interviewer.
I love his interview style. I love it. It's comfortable. I think mine is closest to his than anybody else's, because he doesn't like, it's not like Mike Wallace, well, what did you do on this date? Da, 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 da. It's more like, so tell us about this, and just lets the person talk.
Yeah. Yeah, he sort of lets that lead to the next question.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's who I couldn't think of in my poor senile little mind.
No, you're not old enough to be senile. Neither am I, but it seems to be happening anyway.
But isn't it weird? I mean, it's like you know something, it's there, and then when you're trying to express it, it pops out of your mind, and you're like,
yeah,
it was there a minute ago. Where did it go?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, and then later it will come to you.
Yeah. Because you're probably like me and you just don't want not to remember, you kind of let your mind go, okay, I know his first name is Dick, so we start with A and then you go to B.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what I was doing in the back of my head.
Okay. Hey, well, it worked. Because here we are, talking about Dick Cavett.
So my next sort of question is about, okay, you work with some really top drawer actors.
I'm very fortunate.
Absolutely. Do you create the stories with them in mind, or do they step into the parts you created, or is it a combination?
It's a combination. I mean, there will be, because we do the odd numbered episodes are adaptations, and the even numbered ones are originals. With the adaptations, they usually, you know, the characters already exist in some form. So you're just making the story work in the radio medium. Whereas with the originals, it's a clean slate. So for an adaptation, I generally just try to think of, okay, who do I think is going to be the best person for this particular role? Whereas with the originals, it's usually, okay, I guess these couple of people that have been dying to work together, what do I write for them? And so, yeah, that isn't 100% it, but that's generally how it works.
It's one of the things I find interesting. I find inspiration interesting, too. I find how do you create a character and inspiration, two of my favorite things, because it's different with every single person. Have you ever noticed that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's and sometimes what will happen is the read that I get from somebody will be different than I was expecting, even though I had specifically cast them. hearing it in a particular way in my head, but it's actually better than I was anticipating, which is great. I love it when that happens.
Yeah, and it's also interesting because you also don't know what the actor has in their head when they're performing it. And that's always interesting, too, because that brings the interpretation to a different level than you might have been expecting when you wrote it.
Yeah. And I don't know how other people direct because I remember how my dad did it in the theater, but that's a little different. I generally tend to give a lot of notes about the characters before we get to the studio. And then by the time we're there, they've already got a pretty good idea of what I'm looking for. So it's just fine-tuning.
Yeah, that's the way I do it, too.
Yeah, once we're recording, there isn't a whole lot I have to do. Mostly, my job consists of paying attention, making sure we get good takes of, you know, like two good takes of everything. If people have trouble with pronunciations or names, sometimes, even a very simple sentence, one person will read it one way and one person will read it with an emphasis someplace else, and I have to. If that's an issue, then I have to, you know, give them the one I'm looking for. But by and large, it's very rare that I have to give more than maybe five or six notes during the course of an entire session, which is great because, you know, time is money. And any time we spend in the studio, it's coming out of pocket, so... So the quicker we get things moving along, the better.
That's really interesting too. When you're in the studio, do you feel that when you're in a rehearsal situation, it's more relaxed, and when you're in the studio, it's more tense? How do you relax them so they give the best performance they can, or do you?
No, I stand there with a whip the entire time, or riding crop and slap it against my legs.
Okay, I just got this picture of the guy Otto Preminger in my head.
yeah, that's me, even with monocle. No, not at all.
You will read the line, and you will read it right.
That is definitely not my style. But, you know, what's funny to me is the last time I was back home, I was watching my dad do a table read. And, yeah, I'm not particularly loud in the studio. I mean, I'm pretty easygoing. He's like somnambulistic. he's like very soft spoken and makes these little jokes and it's like, dang. but I think I got off track here. Well, the way we do it's actually a little different. We don't do rehearsals per se. Basically what we do is, I mean, I get the scripts to everybody, preferably a couple weeks ahead of time so they have a chance to get familiar with it. And, you know, once we get to the studio, we read through the first couple of pages just to get the general feel for it. But then after that, it's just go. Go, then go again. And if it still needs a little work, we'll do a third take. And, you know, generally the first take is a rehearsal take. I mean, I record it mostly because if the second take, if there's, you know, a line that we can't use for whatever reason, you know, background noise, someone, you know, popped a pee or someone dropped something or, you know, anything, then I just take it from the first take, if practical. But yeah, it's, you know, we'll usually walk in the door at like, say 10 o'clock, 10 a.m. By 10:20, by 10:20 or so, we're actively recording. And that'll run till noon, and we're done.
Cool. That's pretty cool. Nice and fast.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it's. I think people really like doing the episodes. One, because it's a chance to do a kind of acting they don't necessarily get to do, but also because it's not at all time intensive.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, you're done in like 90 minutes.
Well, also, it's something that I've discussed with not only my guests, but with the actors that I work with on my radio plays, that you're actually working a different set of muscles as an actor when you do voice acting as opposed to voiceovers.
Yeah.
Don't you think? I mean, it's not the same as a voiceover.
No. It really varies. In general, no. I think in voiceover, you're, especially if you're doing it for like animation, you're more constricted in what you can do or how you can do it, because if they've already got the animation in place and you're voicing to that character, you can't take long dramatic pauses and or whatever. You got to sort of match it up with what the animation sells or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it seems like the people who really, I don't want to generalize, it seems like the people who tend to get it the best are theater actors. And I'm not sure what the reason is, but I think one of the reasons is they're used to projecting, which is actually important in a radio drama. Because I can adjust the volume in the final takes, but there gets to be a certain point where if you're having to do it too much, you can hear the difference.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tonal thing. I can't describe it because I do audio engineering, but I'm not an audio engineer.
Yeah.
An audio engineer could tell you what I'm talking about, but I don't have the proper terminology for it.
No, I mean, that's fine, because most people listening wouldn't understand the terminology anyway. They just want to know how it works.
Well, I wouldn't understand it either, so I'd be with them, right there with them.
I mean, it's just like you're trying to describe, we were talking earlier about two of my favorite subjects off the entertainment business are archaeology and astronomy. Just because
yeah.
I love those subjects doesn't mean I understand everything.
Okay.
I mean, I have to watch, sometimes I have to watch a show four times before I actually really get the concept that, even though they're really good at talking to us laymen and doing analogies and stuff, some subjects are just beyond normal conversation, so you're like, what?
Okay. I understand what you mean.
So that would be the same as what you do.
Yeah.
Not, you know, it's just, it's something that may not be their normal thing, but they want to know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Do you have any radio plays that are coming up that you want to let people know, and when they are, and how to get to them?
That are coming up. I'll give you my our usual address. SoundCloud.com/ suspense radio drama. Yeah, all our episodes are there. And the most recent one we have out is Moonrise Sunset, which stars Kate Scott, Susan Eisenberg, Tara Erickson, Adrian Wilkinson, our friend Adrian.
Hey, Adrian.
Melody Tang, Dana. Dana's in that one. And Damon, our friend Damon Grawl, who
cool.
plays her dad. Yeah. Yeah, that's,
and
that one turned out really well.
What's the date of that one?
In terms of, it's already out. So I.
Oh, it's already out. Okay.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Right now, I'm sort of playing catch up on everything. So.
Okay.
But yeah, priority one is I got to get the script for the final episode of season 5 done, which is called "Mystery at Melrose Music," which is Melrose Music is where we record. Melrose Music in Hollywood, California.
Okay.
It's on the Raleigh Studios lot, which is a nice.
I know that.
Setting.
I worked there.
Oh, at Raleigh Studios?
Yeah, I did Golden Girls.
Wow. I'm sorry?
Golden Girls was shot there.
Oh, wow. Okay, I never knew that. Yeah, we're over in the Design Center.
Okay.
Which is
I think do you drive by that? Where is it?
Yeah. If you are heading south and you cross Melrose on Van Ness, all the studio stages, the sound stages are on the right hand side.
Mm-hmm.
The design center is on the left hand side.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's right next door.
Cool. Really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been there since 2012.
Do you go across the street? go visit the stages? I don't know.
No.
That would be impossible.
I've never tried it, but no. I usually when session's over, I'm just ready to go listen to the take. So.
Well, I don't blame you. I don't blame you.
Yeah.
So, do you have anything special? You guys were nominated from some awards. How did you do?
We didn't unlike the Voice Arts Awards where they tell you the finalists and but you don't find out who won until you actually get there the night of. And
yeah.
You know, we found out we didn't win that one.
Mm.
And it was doubly unfortunate because the there were, I think, 67 categories, and ours was 66.
So you had to wait the whole evening.
Yeah, we waited for 3 hours to find out that somebody else won. Come on. Anyway, the Peabody Awards and Webby Awards, we were nominated in both, but they tell you ahead of time who won, and we weren't the winners. So, oh well.
I know. Next time. Well, as they say, it is an honor to be nominated. I should know. I've been nominated too many times not to say, "Oh, it's an honor to be nominated."
Yeah, and I always tell myself the original Suspense was on for 20 years, had like every star in Hollywood on, got one Peabody in 20 years.
Really?
So, yeah. Yep.
I didn't know that. Really? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure what the reasoning was, but that's how it was.
I mean, look at the stars that were big, huge movie stars that never won an Oscar.
Yeah, I'm still in awe of it. Never mind. I was going to say Max von Sydow, but then I remembered. No, it isn't that he hasn't won an Academy Award, it's that he doesn't have a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, which is just crazy to me. So.
I know. That is one of the things I have never understood. I mean, I'm always happy for the people who do get their stars, but I just, Chris York has been my guest a couple of times. Dick York still has not gotten a star. I mean, he was such an icon.
Ridiculous.
I don't get it.
He's a heck of an actor, too. He really, I think people usually remember him from Bewitched, which is fine, because he was terrific on that show. But he did so many other things that he was wonderful at.
Exactly.
He did multiple Twilight Zones. He did
Inherit the Wind.
Of course. I'm of course. Yeah, in fact, I just watched it a couple 2 weeks ago. Something like that. He was just on recently.
Yeah.
On Turner.
Yeah, I love that
movie. That was...
Well, I love the movie for everybody that's in it, too. I mean, that was a hell of a cast.
Yeah. It would have been hard to make a bad movie with that cast, but it was remarkable.
Yeah.
And he was as good as anybody, huh?
And he still hasn't gotten his star. It doesn't...
Yeah.
One of them, TV, movie, something.
Yeah, it's more of a popularity thing. Or it isn't even that, who's willing to pay.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
And it costs a lot of money to get that star. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's like 30,000.
Something like that. And then they have to get voted on by the Hollywood Chamber of Commerce, and and you're not allowed to send letters or anything. It's totally their call.
Yeah,
so
which
it's,
is...
It's a,
yeah.
Yeah, which kind of means it's sort of political.
Yeah.
I don't mean political like politics. I mean political like the movie, TV industry political.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand. Yeah, it's not really, it isn't about who's deserving so much as who got it.
Also, what's going on, do you have a movie, do you have a popular television series? It's very hard to get someone who passed away a star now, because people, they're more, it's like, it's a gift to someone who's popular right now, and that really bothers me, because there's so many legends who still deserve it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The ones that are truly they're memorable, it doesn't matter anyway, because how many times do I walk down the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and I don't mean this to disrespect people, but so many times I'll look at a star and say, who? and it isn't even necessarily, it could be somebody fairly contemporary, and and I just don't know who it is.
Well, I'm like that too, especially the music industry. It's weird. People will be on shows and stuff, and I will have no idea who they are. But then they'll mention some song they did, and I go, oh, okay, that's who I know this music, but I don't necessarily know the person who's the performer of it. That's my own personal thing. I know there are people who are the same with movie stars and TV stars. They know the TV show and the character, but they have no idea the name of the person who performed it.
Is that basically what you meant? Again, it's not a disrespect to anybody. There's so much of popular culture that's outside of my area of what I pay attention to.
I mean, because popular culture has exploded so much, it's sort of impossible to really keep your hand on all of it. There's no way.
and it doesn't help when if I do turn on something, it's either Turner Classic Movies or an old episode of The Twilight Zone.
I'm with you, John. Actually, I spend 90% of my time watching Turner TCM.
I love science shows in general. It's rare that I'll actually sit and watch one because I'll sit and watch it. and with TCM on with the sound off, it's more, it gives my eye something to do on occasion, but I'm still listening to what I'm actually doing. Whereas if there's a program like that on, I'll actually have to stop and watch it, which I don't want to take the time to do. So there you go.
I understand. I like having my television on as a comfort. I mean, there are times when I will be working on stuff, and if I'm not working on my writing, which I can't have sound on or anything to distract me when I'm working on my writing. But if I'm working on my shows or, you know, just doing publicity or something like that, I have it on mostly 90% TCM. We're doing like a commercial for Turner Classic. Well, it's their anniversary, so it's okay.
Oh, is it? I saw Robert Osborne on something about Robert Osborne on last night, and I didn't have the sound on, so I don't know specifically what it was, but like a celebration of him.
I think it's their 25th anniversary or something like that. And they had a show. The one I watched was the best of Robert Osborne, because I've pretty much seen all of the interview shows that Robert Osborne did, but this is like a compiling, and Ben Mankiewicz explaining about who he is and what he did for TCM and stuff. And I watched that.
He is missed. He is very definitely missed.
Yeah, I know. He was TCM.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for him, I don't think it would be here still.
And he just had a certain persona about him, and you know the way he clearly loved what he did, and the way he could get information across in a very, you know, like share this with me sort of way. I haven't really bonded with the newer hosts, and it's nothing against them. I don't have the sound on, so I don't know what they're saying. So.
Oh, there's a new girl from Australia. I really like her. She's cute. I can't remember her name, but she's apparently, like Robert Osborne before her, she's written a lot of books about the business and stuff before she was hired. So she knows what she's talking about, but she's really cute. I like Australia.
Yeah, the redhead, right?
Yeah.
I
forgot
I'm
her name.
I'm drawing a blank on her name. I've never heard her voice. That's horrible. for as much
as I
have
you gotta listen to her voice. She's Australian. You gotta hear that. Especially,
okay, well,
she shouts out to people that are Australian in movies that I found out later in life who they are, that I watched all my life and didn't know that they were Australian. But she will say, oh, and our Australian person, this, like Rod Taylor. I didn't know Rod Taylor was Australian until he was
really?
Older. Oh, no,
yeah.
I did not know, because he had so many accents. He was British, he was American, he was Australian. And he lived here, so
yeah.
And he never talked about it, so I had no idea.
Yeah, I knew that, but I don't remember why. It's not from his accent at all, but
no.
I do remember seeing it someplace.
How I found out was he was talking about doing Winston Churchill. And he said, why would you want an old Aussie like me to play Winston Churchill? I go, oh, really? That's how I found out. It was again, an interview on TCM.
Okay. Yeah, the Australian-related, we have, I think we said the one Australian actor on the show. Michael Tay, but it's funny. He doesn't have a thick accent. He has a little bit of an accent, and he can Americanize it. He can Southernize it. He can Englishize it. But the last episode he came in and did, he actually had to go like a real thick, like a crocodile hunter accent. It was really funny coming out of him, because I'm not used to hearing that from him.
That is so cute. I love
that.
Oh, God. Yeah, I love, I have a lot of friends from Australia, but I love the Australian accent. I think it's, you know, unlike certain other countries, I love hearing people with accents. I love the diversity of all the different accents. It's part of the fun.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
We're coming to the end of the show. I don't know if you have anything that you wanted to let people know about before I let you go.
No, I should. We're in one of those weird stretches where we're just sort of catching up on everything else. We are going to start writing and recording for season 6 probably next month. But until then...
give the website again so they can hear your wonderful shows.
I'm sorry?
Give the website again so they can hear your wonderful shows.
Oh, yeah. It's soundcloud.com/ suspense radio drama, all one word. I mean, it's not one word, but it's all run together.
It's all together, smushed.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all finished together. So it's three separate words.
And do you have, are you on Facebook, Instagram, any of those? Do you want to give your handle so people can say hi?
Facebook, not very much. Twitter, it's @BlueHours. And on Instagram, it's Suspense Radio Drama.
That's it for today. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. I always love talking to you. It's like we're just having a casual chat over coffee.
Well, thank you, Sherry. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you. And
you're
thank
welcome.
You for chatting with Sherry.
Mm-hmm.